No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 2. If you're a regular listener, you know that our favorite topic and one of the reasons we started Shadow Politics was to discuss the need for statehood for the District of Columbia. At least once a month, we do a show on this subject, and today we have a special guest, or at least we hope we have a special guest. He hasn't called in yet. He's out in the field. The senior senator from D.C., Paul Strauss, to discuss what's going on in our effort to make the nation's capital the 51st state. Before we get started, however, let me first introduce my co-host, the glamorous and sophisticated sage of Arizona, Ms. Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Oh, thanks, Senator. I just love your introductions every Sunday. It's always nice to hear what you're going to call me. And of course, I agree with you this time. You definitely hit it on the nail. But, you know, before we start, let's give a shout out to the American men's hockey team. I watched it. I tell you, these guys have, you know, nerves of steel, because I was sitting there and I was like, my heart was just pumping. I was like, you know, on the edge of my seat. Those guys that had the shootout, wow, his name is Osi, isn't it? He was incredibly cool.
Well, I saw the highlights. I didn't actually see the game. I just thought it was incredible. True. And, you know, I remember one of my great memories of the Olympics was, of course, the 1980 team where we beat the Russians for the gold medal when everybody told us that we didn't have a chance. So that was a great moment, and last night was a great moment too. And I know that there was that lovely woman whose name I can't remember from Utah who won a silver in the wildest sport, I think, out there, where they call it skeleton, I think, where they go down head first. The guy who won the bronze medal hit 81 miles an hour. What an amazing.
He was an American Andrian or something like that. That's unbelievable. They go head first. It takes amazing courage and discipline and, you know, God, if my sons only had a little percentage in the discipline needed to do that, they could do their homework on time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Can you imagine that? Turn in their homework, even.
Wow. Well, you
that
know,
something.
As you know, I did my interpretation of Olympic figure skating last week and fell on the ice and got a concussion. So among other things, they prescribed Ritalin for me. I haven't taken it yet, but who knows? Maybe I'll be able to get my homework done now, too, finally, after all these years. We expected to have Senator Strauss, who's a senior senator from the District of Columbia, with us today. But he may be out of reach somewhere. He's out in the field, and this was a last-minute thing. So let's carry on without him, and we hope that he'll call in the during the course of the show, and we'll be able to talk to him a little bit because he's got some interesting things going on. Before we go any further, though, I'd like to give a shout out to a congresswoman from Colorado. We got an important co-sponsor this week on the statehood bill, H.R. 292, in the House. She's the chief deputy whip, Representative Diana DeGette from Colorado's 1st District. You know a little bit about Colorado politics since you worked for Pat Schroeder, who also was a famous congresswoman from Colorado. I don't know what it is about the representatives from Colorado. I think they just get it, the women out there.
Yes.
So thanks, Congresswoman DeGette. We're now up to 65 co-sponsors, and, you know, 265 down, 218 to go, and this thing's in the bag. But we're making progress every day. And so let's talk about a little bit about what's going on with statehood. We're trying to get a hearing in the Senate in front of the Homeland Security and Government Operations Committee. We're pushing hard in the House to get co-sponsors, and things look like they're going along pretty well. Again, we hope Senator Strauss will join us because he's doing some interesting things in Hollywood. But while he's in Hollywood, we're working hard here in the District of Columbia to get things through. And, you know, it's about time, America, that we make this thing happen. So what's going on in Arizona, Kathleen?
Well,
tell me.
I actually have a question for you. Yes. You know, I was doing a little research and I was reading some articles, actually. I think it was an editorial by Susan Milligan, and I think this was in the U.S. News. And she was talking, you know, she brought up a good point. These Republicans, they don't want to support the fight for D.C. statehood, even though Republicans, what is their mantra that you hear all the time? To give local control back to the people. Isn't that what they always say? Get rid of big government, you know, give local control to the states, the municipalities, that it's supposed to go back to local control. Yet they will not let you guys. They're totally against it. They will do everything from decide for the people on abortion or gun control or whatever it is. They won't yet. And you know, I don't get why D.C. is so different than, say, Puerto Rico. You know, Puerto Rico, they support that statehood, but they won't for D.C. And so I'm wondering, you know, you guys pay federal and local taxes. So what if you put in a bill that said, okay, you guys don't want us to be a state, then why are we paying federal government? Why don't we just pay our local taxes? I mean, isn't there something that you can maybe do that's kind of, it may be backward, but that would really kind of bring the whole issue in front of the news to talk about, okay, since you won't do statehood, then we don't want to pay taxes because we don't have representation.
Well, you know what? Eleanor Holmes Norton put in a bill like that a few years ago, and there's been a bill from this brain trust from Texas, a guy named Louis Gohmert, who I swear is the dumbest man in Congress, to do the same thing. But the district pays billions in taxes, so it's never really panned out for us to go that route. The Congress has never really seen fit to give up that money, and unfortunately, we can't do anything without their approval in that regard, because there are a lot of people that are taxed who aren't given the rights to citizenship. So we can't fight it, you know, we can't fight it in the courts. For example, people that have green cards, they pay taxes. They're not allowed to vote. They don't have representation. There's been an established principle in the courts many times over on being able to tax people who don't have the rights of citizenship. So, unfortunately,
but we
haven't been able to do that.
Mm-hmm. That the people who have green cards don't want to be citizens, because everyone I know who has a green card does not want to be a citizen. So, you know, if you don't want to be a citizen, then you should pay taxes. But that's a choice that they make.
Well, I think a lot of them do want to be citizens. I mean, you're right. A lot of them don't. A lot of them are here for jobs and are just as happy to be, you know, citizens of whatever country they come from. But I think a lot of them do. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of people make the same argument that you just made. You know, if you don't like the District of Columbia, move to Maryland or Virginia. So I think you're right. I think we shouldn't have to pay taxes. And I think that that would make an amazing difference if we could get Congress to agree to that. But I don't think we can get Congress to agree to that.
No, but can you imagine how many people would want to live in D.C.?
Oh, my God.
Mostly Republicans.
You've been to my house. My house sits on the border. It sits on the street that divides D.C. from Maryland. How much money would my property be worth if I said you can live in, you know, approximately Montgomery County and not the richest county in the country, one of the richest counties in the country, and not have to pay taxes?
Oh my God.
My real estate value go way up. I'd be the king of Arizona. I'd move out there and.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's so, just funny. It's just, you know, it's just amazing how, you know, there's so much double talk. And I guess that to me is just an instance because they talk about local control, but they don't want to get when they don't want to do it, then it's okay. It's somehow justified. And, you know, in this article, I guess it talks about, you know, the fact that they feel that your government is just too corrupt and that they'd like to have an attorney general there to clean up the you know, the government. But then who are they to decide who's corrupt? I mean, you know, there's corruption in both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. So, again,
well, yeah, I mean, as a guy that comes from New Jersey, you know, and as a woman that lived in New York, I mean, right. We both know how important the George Washington Bridge is and this this scandal, most recent scandal with the governor of New Jersey, Governor Christie, you know, just proves your point. And now we come to find out that, you know, it looks like Governor Christie, this has been his regular modus operandi. That he's, you know, been a bully for a long time, that he, you know, has the mayor of Hoboken said that she was bullied by him and some other people were bullied by him. So, yeah, corruption, neither party has a, you know, monopoly on corruption. They both do it. In D.C., certainly we've had. You know, we have a mayor who's under federal investigation now. We've had several council members that have resigned or been charged with things. And we certainly have our problems. But that's never been a barrier to citizenship for anybody else. And it shouldn't be a barrier to citizenship for us.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, you guys pay a lot in taxes and property taxes and, you know, you serve on the jury. You do everything everyone else does.
Right.
When I went back, I was shocked at, you know, what's going on in D.C., the I don't know, what would you call it, regentrification of you know, Southwest and Northeast and Southeast. And it's completely changed. And maybe, and I hate to say it, but maybe with – it's a very expensive market now to rent or to buy there. So maybe people who are moving in to D.C. will get fed up with not having representation. And I hate to say it, but sometimes, you know, the poor can you know, do all their demonstration. Nobody really listens because they're not afraid of them. But those who may have money and are, you know, politically connected might be able to help you. It's sad to say that. It's very sad to say that.
Well, you know, I think also with poor people, they have other things on their plate, like staying alive, you know? I got to tell you, one of the worst things that's happened this week is some 8-year-old girl in Anacostia was at 3:00 in the afternoon going from her aunt's house back to her house, which was a couple of doors away, and she was shot in the chest by two guys that were having a gun battle over a drug buy across the street and just started throwing bullets at one another. And, you know, I had the same thing. When I lived on Capitol Hill, there was a little girl whose mother sent her to this local 7-Eleven for something, which was a few doors away, and she was shot through the head and killed. For exactly the same reason that two gangbangers were having a gun battle and throwing shots at each other. Of course, they missed each other and they hit this little girl. So, you know, there's a lot of things on people's agendas that, especially if they don't have money, that preclude them from being too involved in the statehood battle. But there's a lot of hope. You're right. A lot of people are moving in, and not only do they have money, but they're young. Yeah. And there's a lot of hope that we have in young people moving in. We call them millennials, because we think maybe they'll be more upset about the situation than us old timers who have been around forever and, you know, seem to have gotten used to the situation. It doesn't look like we're getting anywhere with Senator Strauss if he's out there. If there's anybody else in Washington listening, call in. Tell us what you think about statehood in the District of Columbia, and we'll tell you what's going on. Give us your opinions. We want to hear from you. So what else is going on? What's going on in Arizona these
days? It's like 88 degrees today. I think it was record-breaking, and we haven't had any rain in January, which is the month that Tucson usually gets its rain so that we don't completely dry up and you know, like, what do you call it when you sizzle, you know, in a frying pan. And I'm really concerned because if we don't get rain, by the time we get to May, it'll be in the hundreds, and we're going to have the whole state will start to just, you know, burn because of the dryness and, you know, with no rain, no moisture in the air. It's awful, and it sounds great right now. You know, we're having this incredible weather in January. This is typically the kind of weather we get in February, not this hot, but, you know, February and March. But this is just ridiculous. Now, I've heard people say, oh, well, and what these people are talking about, you know, because of the cold back east, there's no such thing. Look at all that snow back east. What they don't understand is global warming doesn't mean that everyone's warming up. It means that the climate is having drastic, you know, extreme weather changes and patterns. And that's what's happening here in Arizona. A whole state is in a drought. I know California is too. And, you know, by the time May comes, oh my gosh, everyone's going to be wanting to go back east because it's just going to be unbearable here. We'll have a problem with water. Well, you know, everything, the fires will start. And this is something that people don't get. Global warming doesn't mean that everywhere it's going to warm. It just means that the patterns are changing and that it's this extreme, you know, changes. This, you know, when I got there to DC, right, it started to snow and it hasn't stopped. And that was what, January 6th when I left?
Well, you know, I hate to take a cheap shot here, but let's not forget who told us that global warming was a myth, right? It was those Republicans in Congress who kept on saying that, oh, these are cyclical weather changes, patterns that we've seen over the years, this is just a cycle that we haven't seen in 100 years, so people don't understand it, but, you know, it's a normal thing. Let me tell you something. We have a foot of snow on the ground here in Washington, and on Wednesday it's going to be 60 degrees. Now, right. That's not normal.
No.
And you know, it's time for us to do something about it. And now the worst polluters on the planet are the Chinese and other countries that are in the middle of building up their industrialization. And now that we've polluted the planet, who are we to tell them that they can't use cheap energy sources like coal and other things? We're in a really, really dire strait, and I worry more about this climate change than anything else for our kids. I think they're gonna really have a lot to deal with in the future over this.
I do too, and you know, remember how we used to learn that thing: for everything that happens, there's a reaction, or, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly the words, but when you have so many, so many people on this earth to think that there's not a consequence is just lunatic. It's lunacy, because of course it's going to have the more gas and the more heat and the more concrete and, you know, air conditioning and all those things that we use, the more energy we use, there's got to be a consequence for everything, you know? And I just don't understand why people say, you know, all right, maybe we don't believe in global warming, but something's happening to the earth. Something's changing. You know, if you look at the tsunamis to the droughts everywhere, to the earthquake, I mean, there's something going on and we have to just face it. And we're sucking so much stuff out of the earth. You know, there's got to be a consequence. So I don't know what's going to take to make these Republicans, because I have a lot of Republican friends who say the same thing. Oh, well, you know, 150 years ago this happened. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I don't think the polar, you know, the ice polar, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time talking today, but, you know, those weren't melting 100 years ago. They're melting now.
Well, yeah, you see polar bears that are moving because they've got no ice left and they're dying off.
And I think it's a big thing is the temperature of the oceans is changing, which makes this dramatic change in the weather patterns. You know, I mean, you don't have to be a scientist to understand that for everything that you do, there's going to be something else that happens, cause and effect, you know. So I think we all have to open our eyes. And instead of this pointing and trying to make each other look stupid, let's just realize we're all going to suffer if we don't do something now. And I'm really scared about the summer out here because it's going to be pretty unbearable.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, you guys are going to suffer first, I think.
Yes.
Places like Arizona and, you know, also people that have had traditional water problems like California, you know, it's just going to be terrible. And, of course, when you talk not as much about Arizona, but when you talk about states like the Dakotas and Iowa and California and Florida and places where we get a lot of produce – you know, we're great at manufacturing food in this country, but you can't grow crops without water. And the worse that gets, you know, the more we're going to get we're going to have problems with this food supply, and that's just going to add to more problems. And God knows where that's going to lead. Well, now that we've depressed everybody, is there any good news out there? I don't know. You know, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, U of A is number one in basketball, you know, when we go into the March Madness. But I, of course, am an ASU fan. And, you know, U of A and ASU have a huge, huge rivalry. So in Douglas, where I was this past weekend, most of them are U of A fans. So having that game where ASU beat U of A in basketball was really kind of sweet, but you know, ASU is not ranked very high, but U of A has done an incredible job. I mean, they had like a 21 victory, you know, 21 they won 21 games in a row, and so they're going to be pretty, I think, number one or number two when March Madness comes. So that's a big deal in Arizona, is the U of A and ASU basketball games. And I'm trying to think what else. You know, everyone's just been talking about the weather and how warm it is, and everyone's kind of like, oh my gosh, what does that mean for us? And, you know, we haven't even hardly had wind, so this is usually a windy season. So everyone's kind of like waiting for some kind of shoe to drop, a weather shoe, you know, because it's just not, you know, it's just things aren't just right. So that's kind of what we've been all talking about, the U of A basketball and the weather, you know, and we've been watching all the weather in the rest of the country, and it's just like, whoa, you know, for D.C. to be so cold for so long and so much snow. And I think New York still was snowing up in New York. I think it was Friday night or Saturday. So it's the craziest
weather
for them, too.
And they're talking about more snow. We're right on the bottom of the line, but it looks like they're going to get 3 inches plus in New York and Philadelphia and Chicago. My daughter, who goes to school in Chicago, says there's just snow and more snow and more snow. And I think they're up to about 70 inches of snow so far this year in Chicago with the latest snow. And the record is 90 inches. So they're getting close by the time that the winter's over. And I'd like to thank you personally Kathleen, for bringing up basketball, because last night I got to watch the University of Maryland play Duke, who we hate with a passion. You have to sign before you graduate from the University of Maryland. You have to sign a paper saying that you hate the Duke Blue Devils. We lost by 2 points. We were down by 10 points, and we crawled back, and we lost by 2 points to Duke, making me the most depressed I've been in a long time. And last night is the last time we will ever play Duke. It's one of the great basketball rivalries, because the jackasses at the University of Maryland have decided to put us into the Big Ten. We're getting out of the ACC after all these years, so we never get to play Duke again unless we meet them in something like March Madness, which, from the looks of things, we're not going to be in for a while. And then on top of all that, we have a great basketball team traditionally, but we have a not-so-great football team, and we're going into the toughest football conference in America. We're going to start playing Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State, and, you know, we'll probably never win another football game in the history of, you know, of college football. So if I didn't feel like stepping in front of a bus or a snowplow, I guess, would be more appropriate before you started talking about basketball, I sure as hell feel like stepping in front of a
bus. I'm sorry. That's got to be really bad news.
That's all right.
Because I remember that rivalry, and it's like, you know, when you have a rivalry that deep and that long, it's just so hard. And to have lost, that's not good. Yeah. By two points. Oh, my gosh.
And of course, Duke is always a great basketball team. They're always in March Madness. They're always in the thick of things. And Maryland traditionally has been a good basketball team, but they're up and down. And lately, they haven't been in March Madness. They didn't get in last year. And of course, Arizona, you're right. Arizona's just doing great. Right. And of course, they're also great. But they're great at everything. I mean, they're not only a good basketball team, they're traditionally, I believe, one of the top baseball teams in the country. And they're also got a great football team. They're usually in the hunt for national ranking in football as well.
And they also got great softball. Women's softball is really high up there, too. They do very, very well. And, you know, my son is attends U of A. And so it's always kind of fun to poke at him, you know. And Friday night was kind of that thing, because we, even though it doesn't count, it does count to a lot of the ASU fans. So that's kind of where we are right now, which is kind of nice. Nothing really, you know, nothing really traumatic. I'm sure that the next week we'll have some stuff coming up. And I just was at, you know, I love the Rotarians, because, you know, I think I'm third generation. My son might be fourth generation. And the Douglas Rotary Club would have been the oldest club in, I think it's like 78 years old, in Arizona. But in World War II, or I think in 1928, they disbanded so they could all go to fight in World War I. And so that is the only reason why the Rotary Club in Douglas is not the oldest. So it's real tradition. My grandfather was involved in it, my dad, you know, my sister and myself. And so we had a dance for something, and we do something very different than most things. We have scholarships for kids that, you know, if you finish your freshman year and you just messed up and you have a 1.0, yet by your senior year you brought your grade point average up to a 3.0 or better, we give you, it's not much, but we recognize that student. We give them $500 to go to anywhere they want to. And I'm telling you, these are the kids that never get anything. They never get a knowledge, you know. As most small towns, you know, you get the teacher's kids that always get the scholarships, or, you know, say, you know, the local people who are on the school board, you know, their kids get something. But these are genuine kids that just, you know, nobody knows who they are. Whenever we make the announcement, they go like, everyone looks like, who are these kids? Well, they're the ones that work the hardest, and they're the ones that really deserve the scholarships. I get real tired of seeing year after year, you know, the same kids always get it from the time they're, you know, young to, you know, high school, and they take the easy classes. And these are kids that really work their butt off to raise a grade point average. And it's just too bad that those kind of kids don't get rewarded more.
Well, you know, I wish there was a troublemaker scholarship because you and I would have both gotten that. But I see that we have Senator Strauss on the phone. So let's get him on and find out where the hell he's been. Senator Strauss, are you out there?
I have, and I apologize, Mike. We were actually shooting one of our celebrity PSAs, and the shot ran long. I tell you, there's a lot more work that goes into these things than just taping them. I'm learning a lot about how complicated it is to get these done, but we've had a great response, and we're going to have some great spots airing very soon.
So who are you doing spots with out there, Senator Strauss? I know you've done one with Mario Van Peebles, and by the way, I've been seeing tweets from him and Kate Walsh and Norman Golightly and Richard Schiff and all these incredible people. Of course, I get to hang with Kathleen Gomez, so that's that's almost as good. But who else are you doing PSAs with?
We just, the one I just did was with a television actress, Alexis Cara. She's on a show that is about to premiere called Mixology. It's going to be airing on ABC right after Modern Family. And she was just so funny. And the theme is, she talks about her work as a comedian and she likes to make people laugh. And the tagline is, taxation without representation is no joke. Support DC statehood. Earlier today, we had Evan Handler out from Californication, Sex in the City, and he was talking about contrasting his life as sort of the quintessential Californian with a voting senator and a voting member of the House in D.C., not having representation. And then, of course, Mario Van Peebles, who is very supportive of the issue and really committed to working with us. So he was our first. And we have more planned.
So do we know where these will show, Paul? Because we've done one in the past. You did one with Hayden Panettiere, and I was happy to be involved. I came up with the Think Outside the Box thing, and you did a commercial with her, and we showed it on local TV, and I think it helped. But where are these going to be shown? Is this something that we're going
to
see?
We're going to try and get these out as often as possible. First of all, the goal is to begin to target these with the individual senators who we need to move. So we're going to try and get them in as many markets as we can, and of course, tying them into social media and other follow-up strategies. So we are working that out, but ideally we're going to try and tie them in with various shows that the folks are doing. So the one we just shot with Alexis Carr, we're going to try and work in to her series schedule airing on ABC, Mixology, and I think you're going to be seeing them sort of like we did with the Hayden, but hopefully with a lot of the folks who've been working with us, we're going to have some even more help than we had last time in getting this message out.
Good.
So let me be the devil's advocate, because that's one of my favorite positions. You know, the Republicans have an incredible, I would say, hatred towards the liberal Hollywood faction, right? And so you're going to use the Hollywood, these celebrities, to do these ads, and they're going to be in Democratic, districts or in Republican districts?
Well, I don't think we're going to run over the radical right to our cause with a couple of celebrity spots, but I think where it helps is that you have the benign neglect that we get from Democrats, even those who are sympathetic. Senator Tom Carper supports statehood so much he introduced the bill, but we need to give him a little nudge to have the hearing. Senator Barbara Boxer, a co-sponsor of the bill, a supporter of it, she's going to be seeing her constituents coming out for it. That's going to add some motivation for her to continue to push the bill. So it may not win over all of the hearts and minds of the people, but it's going to draw enough attention and raise enough awareness that it's going to help us get where we need to be in the Senate. Obviously, the House of Representatives, Republican control, the legislative strategy has to be different, but this is a gigantic step forward. I mean, it's taken us so long just to get D.C. statehood moved beyond an issue that is only talked about in D.C. So to reach a national audience with these national celebrities, I think will be very helpful.
So you feel that you're going to move people, say, in California to actually call in and say, you know, Senator Boxer, we think this is a good issue, and please, you know, help them get a hearing. I mean, is that what your goal is?
Right, certainly one of the first steps that we need, but yeah, we're going to ask directly. We're going to reach them through the various medium, and, you know, Senator Boxer's on the bill, but Senator Feinstein isn't.
Right.
This gives them a reason to go on the bill to help support it. And we're also trying to make them interesting and a little funny and tie it into different characters so it's not just a civics lecture, but we're focusing on the issue of equal rights. And I think that's something that resonates out here and will resonate in other districts across the country.
Well, you know, one other thing that we have to point out, and Kathleen knows this very well because this is one of the objectives of our show, is that when a survey was done about 8 years ago on the situation in the District of Columbia, 80% of the people that were surveyed didn't know that we didn't have the same right as everybody else to representation and to self-determination. So just getting the word out there is an important thing for us, just so that people know, you know, 80% also agree that we should have the same rights as everybody else. So just getting the word out is an important thing, even if we don't do anything else with it.
And that's a common theme of all the spots, is we're literally educating the celebrities and the American people as to the issue at the same time.
Yeah, and it really is an important aspect of what we need to do. And let me ask you, since Senator Strauss has had this office for he's running for his fourth term, so he's been around for a while. That's half our problem, Paul, is getting the word out. The other half is motivating people locally. What do you think we can do to do that we're not doing?
Well, I think there's going to be some enthusiasm when they see that this isn't just a D.C. issue, but that we have people on both sides of the country who care about advancing our rights and our equal justice interests.
Well, let me ask you, you know, one of the things I've always talked about when we talk about statehood is that it doesn't seem like your council is behind this movement because you guys aren't funded. And it would be something that they could do. They could at least fund the delegation to be able to go out and pursue statehood and do, you know, a good job of lobbying. So how do you move your D.C. council? Do you think these commercials are going to do it? Or do you think it'll put some pressure on them? Or, you know, do you think that they'd just be starry-eyed maybe, that all these celebrities are going to be supporting this issue and they kind of don't really even want to bring it to the table?
I think it's going to help. I think when they we'll see what kind of impact that has. The council has been a problem on this. They haven't been where they need to be. That's not all members of the council, but certainly in some of the leadership it has. We're able to do this with a lot of donated resources and some very limited budget, and I think if we can show that a little investment yields a big payoff, this might be the thing that really gets them perhaps more invested. But we'll have to see. I think when the people see results from the spot, hopefully it'll be used to add some pressure to the council doing what we need them to do on this.
Well, you know, I also have to say, Paul, we usually take a break. We're going to take a break in a minute, but I want to get this in before we do that because I know that you're on a cell phone and you may not be able to stay with us. But I've seen a lot of press already. I mean, I see Mario Van Peebles and Kate Walsh and Danielle Pennebaker and all these people tweeting about this.
Yeah.
And Politico, our local city paper ran a little blurb on it, but Politico ran just a little blurb on it, and I noticed that there were more than 75 responses, more than 75 comments in the comment section, which is way more than we get usually.
Yeah.
You know, if there's an article in the paper, we usually get 3 or 4 responses. So some of those were positive, some of them were negative, but, you know, at least we're starting a conversation, which is what this is all about. So I think it's already having a dramatic impact.
Frank, thanks for giving me the time today. I think it's going to be a great initiative. These aren't just celebrities. These are celebrity advocates, and the Creative Coalition has had a great track record of using people in the artistic medium to advance social justice causes. So with them on our side, it's going to be, I think, a new chapter in our struggle. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for being with us, Paul. But before we let you go, we've got Ann from the district online, too, and maybe she's got a question for you. So stay with us for a second. Ann, are you with us?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to thank Senator Strauss for his efforts, because it is absolutely critical that we educate the people of the United States about the status of the citizens of the District of Columbia. And you had discussed earlier about the elected office holders in the District of Columbia and whether they support statehood. And I must say we have a lot of office holders who seem to be much more colonial officials than they are officials who want to represent a full, free American citizens, which we aspire to be if we can become a state.
But thank you, Ann, for all the great work you've done on this issue, and I think it's going to be a great new chapter. Mike, thanks so much for having me
all right.
on.
Thank you, Senator, and we'll talk
to
you soon. And since we have Ann on the phone, let me also mention that there's a White House petition that was started by a veteran named Robert Branham, and we want you all to go to wh.gov/IROUO and sign this petition for D.C. statehood. Now, as you may have heard, we lost a great American this week. Shirley Temple Black, who was not only the most talented 7-year-old in the history of the world, but also a career politician. She ran for Congress in 1967, was a U.S. ambassador to the UN, ambassador to Ghana, and chief of U.S. protocol. Franklin Roosevelt once called her America's greatest weapon against the Depression. In honor of the Creative Coalition, who is helping us today, and a great American, here's a classic from Irving Berlin by the late, great Ethel Merman. We'll be back in a minute.
Show business like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling.
Well, and thank you, Ethel Merman, for reminding us that there are no people like show people. As you know, Kathleen, I know that, because my mom was the director of the local amateur theater, and they really are great people. So we thank the people of the Creative Coalition for standing with us, and we mourn the loss of this great American, Shirley Temple Black. And I also wanted that song played because you know what musical it's from, Kathleen?
Which one?
Annie Gets Your Gun.
Ah, there we go. So, Juanita Gets Her Gun.
So in tribute to Annie Oakley Gomez from Arizona, I thought it was only appropriate that we play that song.
Well, hey, you know, I need it. We need it out here. We need guns to be able to control all those bad people that just want to take over. And the government officials are going to knock down our doors.
You need guns to go steal water from California, I think.
Well, that's true. That's dang true. Yeah. You know, we bought the London Bridge because we assumed California would drop off, and it hasn't done it yet. It hasn't sunk to the ocean yet because we're waiting for that, you know, that beach shore real estate. So come on, California, do what you're supposed to do.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because the first time I went to London, I saw the London Bridge, and there were actually signs on it that said, see the London Bridge before it moves to Lake Havasu City, Arizona. And we thought it was a joke. We laughed. We said, isn't it clever that some, you know, like American tourists have put these signs up as a joke? And then, you know, of course, a couple of years later, we found out it was true. They had sold the bridge to the people of Arizona. So
it was actually some really rich guy who bought it. And it's Lake Havasu. You know, it's a man-made lake from the bridge up there by Las Vegas or whatever. And so yeah, you know, I mean, heck, I wish California, you know, everyone assumed it was going to drop off by now because of the earthquakes. But yeah, we're going to have our guns to go over and steal the water from Mexico or California or wherever else, you know. But that's great, Michael. I'm glad you did that for me. I didn't even realize it, and it pleases me very much. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, speaking of guns, you know, this is an issue we keep on coming back to. We've tried, both Kathleen has tried and I have tried, to get people on the pro-gun side of things to come on our show, and we just haven't been able to. I'd like to point out again that we had a great spokesperson for the Coalition to End Gun Violence, and he came on immediately when we asked him, no problems, and he did a great job. So if you're out there and you think the gun laws are too stiff in the district, I mean, in the United States, I know you probably think they are in the District of Columbia because we have tough gun laws. But call us. Let us know how you feel, because we really like to start a debate on this. And another thing that we've been talking about for a long time is immigration. You know, it looked a couple of weeks ago. See, I should have known better than to say nice things about Republicans. But the week that you were out helping veterans, Kathleen, I praise the Republicans for making moves on immigration in the Senate, but now it's stalled again. It doesn't look like it's going to move anytime soon, and we really need to do something about this.
I think so too, and I think, you know, I feel for those people, and I always, because I never hear anybody in the media, any politician, even any group that's for gun control or against gun control, talk about those people who have done it the right and legal way. And if you're going to fast track anybody, why don't we fast track them first? Because, you know, what do you say to people who follow the law, and then we say, okay, well, it didn't really matter that you spent 14 years trying to get your citizenship, because we're just going to let everyone else get it, you know, also. I mean, I just think that's wrong, and I don't understand why nobody talks about that. It's almost like, you know, it doesn't matter, and I think it does. I think it matters a lot to it sends a message, and, you know, look, I know kids that have been born over here, and they really appreciate America, and I feel for them. I know people who come over from Mexico just to have children, and I understand, maybe I would do the same thing, but we got to start doing something and stick to it, because nowhere else in the world do they have this kind of policy where you give amnesty to, you know, every 20, 30 years, you're giving amnesty to people who come here illegally. You know, and I just think that if you're not going to stand by the laws of that the country has set, then why have them? Don't have the laws. Because it seems to me that the people who follow the laws are the ones who don't benefit from doing the right thing. It's everybody benefits from doing the wrong thing. So if you're not going to stick to your laws, then just get rid of them and start over, or have chaos, or have a free thing where everyone can come and go as they want. But, you know, we're the only place that does that. I don't know of any other country that does, you know, has such a kind of this attitude about living in their country.
Well, you know, we really, I think you and I have a little difference of opinion on some of these issues, but we need to reconcile them. I think you're right. I think we can't just leave it open-ended, because then nobody wins. The people that are here illegally don't win, and the people that are trying to do it right don't win either. Yeah, and we have such a screwed up a system. You know, my personal interaction with this system, I'll tell you a brief story. We had a woman who was a friend of ours who worked for us, actually, babysat our children, and her husband was over here legally with the embassy of Uganda, and they were Sri Lankan people, and they were from Sri Lanka, but both their children were born in the United States, and as such were American citizens. Well, when the kids were like 10 and 12, her husband got a notice that the Ugandan embassy was going to terminate him because it got out in Uganda that they were using people in embassies that weren't Ugandan citizens, and it made the government look bad, like they weren't given opportunities to their own people. So they fired everybody who was not a Ugandan. Well, they went through everything they could to become citizens, and they couldn't become citizens, and they told them that they had to fly back to Sri Lanka and apply for citizenship. So my wife and I scraped up the money to get the family to fly back to Sri Lanka to apply for citizenship. And guess what? When they got back to Sri Lanka, they won the lottery. There's a thing called the immigration lottery where they let so many people in from different countries every year, and their name was picked. So they really never had to leave after all. They got their citizenship through this lottery thing, and it cost them, now these are people that didn't make very much money, it cost them $5,000 to take their family back to Sri Lanka, and then after they got there, they found out that they were citizens anyway. So, I mean, that kind of stuff is just crazy, you know? And luckily, my wife and I loaned them the money, and they paid us back. We didn't charge them any interest or anything. But if they had to borrow the money from some fly-by-night company or something, it might have cost them twice that much. Now both their kids are productive. So I'm pretty sure their oldest child is about to graduate from college, and their youngest child is in college. Our friend Osmia works for NASA. You know, I mean these are great American citizens, and it's just crazy that we have a system that's so disjointed.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It
so
is.
We gotta
it
do
is.
Something about it. And the next few weeks we're gonna try to have somebody on. We've reached out to several people on everything from Obamacare to immigration. So in the next few weeks, we hope to have some people on to talk about these shows. And please, we got a few minutes left here. I'm going to let Kathleen say a few things because she's always yelling at me that I don't get let her talk, you know, even
you know
though.
Yeah. It was great when you had your concussion because you really couldn't focus on the fact that I was having so much airtime. So that was one of my best days, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that we talk about a lot that I am crazy about is the education issue, because we're not producing really, you know, students like we did in the past. You know, when I remember when we had the discussion with the gentleman who's going to have the show on education.
Yeah,
I'm so bad with names.
Dr. Miller.
Right.
Dr. Miller, yeah.
And I had wondered where the Common Core, this new curriculum policy that everyone's, you know, now doing, where it came from. And it came from Bill Gates. And, you know, and it basically is making our students more like the Chinese and Japanese, like little worker bees, not thinkers, not creative, imaginary, you know, think out of the box and reach for your dreams. It's just more like this drudgery. I know my mother was telling me about my niece who's just having to learn math, you don't memorize the tables anymore. That's a no-no all
right.
of a sudden. You count on your hands and, I don't know, something about bubbles. And I'm thinking, oh, my, you know, and we do this experimentation every 10 years. And I know since my kids were in public school, there's been 3 or 4 different ways of learning math. I mean, we got to stop and realize what this country was built on, giving that creative, that those
right.
kids, that belief you can do whatever you want. You know, you study hard, you work hard, think outside the box, you can be anything you want to be, and you can take our nation with you. And I don't think that's what's happening. We're really kind of, I don't know if this is right, we're dumbing down these kids or making them into little worker bees so that we can all have these like technological computerized people. And that's not going to be the future. I mean, it is, but you know, new ideas come from creativity and imagination. And I don't see that being encouraged in the public school. So hopefully we'll be able to get some people on with us that, you know, from everything from class size and how much that matters to maybe we can get Randy Weingarten on. I think she does support the Common Core. And I think any curriculum that does not teach our students to write based on the idea that nobody will be writing, I think is ridiculous. I think that that's crazy. There's still a lot of people that don't have computers. And if your electricity goes down, which that to me is going to be, you know, the way they get us, you know, just have our grids go down, we're going to be lost because nobody's not going to know how to write anything. It's just crazy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And you see it every day. You go and you give some guy at the store a dollar for 96 cents worth of stuff, and he can't figure out how much change he owes you unless he plugs it into the computer. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I'm going to speak at a dinner on Saturday night. I know this is something that's near and dear to your heart. But, you know, they're cutting out athletic programs in school. Athletics don't matter. And that's something that bothers me, too. And this is from a kid who was the worst kid on my Little League team. You know that. My brother used to say to me, if my mother ever sold the station wagon, they would cut me from the team because the only reason I played was because she had a car big enough to take the whole team to the game. And that was true. But, you know what? Sports taught me how to be a team player. They taught me how to appreciate the accomplishments of other people and work towards a common goal. And math and science and English may have taught me how to get a job, but it was sports that taught me how to be a leader. And we need these things. We need sports. We need art. We need libraries. We need all these things that build the whole child. And that's the problem with exactly what you're talking about, Kathleen, as we're looking at the little pieces and we're not worried about the whole child. And you're right. It's Albert Einstein and Edison. And, you know, these are the people that were the great heroes of America. And Bill Gates. I mean, Bill Gates, look at him. He was a creative genius.
I understand.
And now he wants
to
put everybody in a box.
Exactly. He was a genius because he thought outside of the box. But, you know, now because he's had so much money, that doesn't mean that he can come in. And he has. Everyone listens to him. And now they've bought into this idea of his. And I think this is very dangerous.
I agree. And we're going to leave with on the following note. Bill Gates, send all your money to Kathleen and everybody else. Everybody else, go to wh.gov/IROUO and sign the White House petition for statehood. Thank you for listening, America. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, America.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.